Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, the food and drink programme for Cambridge. And of course, many thanks to Ollie Slack for the last hour of football coverage. I am Matt Bentman, and with Alan Alder just returning from holiday, I have a special guest with me here in the studio, Carrie Pavitt.
Hello.
Now, you're no stranger to our programme, are you, Carrie? Because you've featured several times over the years with your business, Pavitt's Pies. But today, Carrie is here with us on the other side of the mic. So, Carrie, would you like to start the rundown of what we have on this episode?
Certainly. We have Egyptian fusion food on today's menu, courtesy of Onnie's Wine Bar on Mill Road. In the brewing world, the Calverley brothers, Sam and Tom, offer up some stout advice. Cambridge's chefs discuss recipes involving celeriac. Do we know any other names for celeriac?
Yeah, celery knob.
Turnip rooted celery.
Celery root.
Ugly, fat, gnarled, warty, bulbous, brown hairball.
Okay. And with a brilliant white interior, though, that can be sliced, grated, roasted, blanched, stewed or mashed. And more about celeriac later, as well as our up-to-date information from Twitter, the Olio food app, and, of course, our roundup of the food and drink news towards the end of the programme.
So, November is rapping on the door.
Yeah, Christmas is coming, the geese are getting fat, and just the other day a letter flooded into the Cambridge offices inviting us to check out a seasonal sample menu over at Maurizio de Apollonio's restaurant and bar. Now, that establishment is, of course, called Maurizio's, and it's at 44 Mill Road.
Yes, and Alan interviewed Maurizio back when he first opened the business along with his partner, Sweet.
Yeah, I've never been there myself, but with Alan away on holiday, I decided to go along and check it out, get an impression of the place, and present it to you, dear listener, here.
I came here when Maurizio first opened.
It's like you grow up in a pot with all the tomato sauce around. You're always there. There's mum and dad cooking. Not one of them, both of them cooking. Feels like you haven't got a choice. You know, you just learn how to cook without knowing.
And it's one of the few places you could sit at a bar. And the food is great.
When I'm around food, especially garlic, tomato sauce, I feel that I'm not working.
And the wine is obviously fantastic. And you get Maurizio.
And my dad used to say, water makes you rust. Inside, you rust, you know? So wine doesn't.
Kitchen needs you. Is that all right?
Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah, otherwise I just talk to all
just
night.
He just doesn't stop talking.
Yeah, I love it.
No, but they do actually need you. They do need
right. You. That's the key is it's always fun here. It's the experience and the food and the wine. Yeah, like, I love this place. It's unique in Cambridge.
Your Christmas menu is out. We are here for the sampling of the Christmas menu, and you're very quick off the mark this year.
I didn't realize how quick I had to do this, because I thought I'm not going to think about Christmas until November. And last year we didn't, but this year I think we were a bit more prepared. And then I thought, if I give a chance to people to do this from just before December, because some people don't want to do much in December. You know, in December they might think about going away, but they want to come out for a meal in November. So it's available from the 19th of November, lunch and dinner, and it's £28, so you get three courses, yeah? So you've got choice on each course of three things.
For starters, there's a choice of Italian sausage al pomodoro, or a salmon cucumber and black olive salad, but I chose the butternut squash and parmesan crust soup. Now, parmesan is often too strong for me, and I wouldn't consider it in a soup.
And it's got the best flavour of the parmesan right at the bottom of it. So we cut it in chunks, so we put it in.
This really worked in flavour and texture. It's good to challenge your tastes.
And then you can choose your wine.
Yeah, the Christmas Sunday meal seems really lovely, and I think it offers something for every palate, really. Everything we've had so far has been delicious.
We made a wild boar today. It's been cooking since this morning, 8 o'clock. You know, there is a lot of things going in, like juniper berries, sage, a bay leaf, rosemary. And then we add lots of wine, let it steam with the wine, and then put some of our San Marzano tomato from Naples. So, and I think it's something you can guys taste tonight. We're going to offer it with the paccheri pasta.
And it is a beautiful, strong wild boar, without being overpowering. Complemented nicely with the pecorino cheese, which, for those who don't know, is a hard Italian cheese made from sheep's milk.
That's something that came across about 3 years ago. We were laughing after a few drinks, trying to say to our friend, we're going to go and kill a boar, and he's still around, you know. And now, last year, we made a wild boar stew, and this year, we did a ragu just for change. And when we were doing pop-ups before opening this place, we did a wild boar evening at La Raza. So he's always going to be around. I think it's something that is a real speciality. And the way we cooked it tonight will be offered also with Napolitan cod, which is the Napolitan with the San Marzano tomato again, with the same pasta, with the paccheri pasta. Or if you're vegetarian, you just have the porcini mushroom and cream. And I think it's three beautiful options. One is meat, one is vegetable, and the other one is, how do you call it, flexitarian. But yeah, so I think there's something for everybody, isn't it? The other beautiful thing is about the boar is we give the chance to people to drink one of these wine, which I named the Three Kings. And I'm very fondant about that, because if you travel to Italy, there's three wine that everybody will know. It is the Barolo from the Piemonte. I say the King of Piemonte, which is the Nebbiolo grape. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Amarone, which is from Veneto. I always say Romeo and Juliet for people to know, or Venice. And then one of my favorite, which is the Sangiovese Grosso, which is the Sangiovese grape, 100%, which makes the Brunello di Montalcino. And these three wine together, the guy sitting over there right now, mm-hmm. last night bought them all.
Can I just ask you a very quick question? How has business been for you since Alan interviewed you a year ago?
It's been tough. I've enjoyed most of it. I think even the bit that I didn't enjoy, I'm glad that they've happened, because you can't escape them. They, you know what I mean? They're a little test.
Yes.
And now I get it, and I'm thinking I'm ready for the next challenge. I've just put another person in the kitchen, and they're working flat out. Mm. And then there is always me with my eye. In Italian, we say l'occhio del padrone ingrassa il cavallo. The eye of the boss makes the horse fat. We don't pre-cook the pasta here. That's another of my decision, which I'm very firm about, which could be a problem to have when you get really busy. You might tend to do that, but no. We wait, you wait, so you wait and we cook. Yeah, and then the pasta comes out. And the beauty is that you choose your pasta. So you got the tagliatelle here, you got the rigatoni, yeah. This one is a gluten-free rummo, one of the best gluten-free pasta you can have. You're not gonna get better than that, just arrived. That's the rigatoni. Yeah. Then you have the orecchietta, and you have the casereccia. Casereccia is beautiful because the middle never cooks as much as the outside, so it stays nice and hard. It's got a good bite. And then we have farfalla, and we have the trofia. And this one is the little conchiglietta, which is beautiful with pasta e ceci, chickpea, pasta and potato, double carbs, yeah? You name it, we cook.
On a different note, I'd like to point out that Maurizio's also do traditional aperitivo. Now, I love aperitivo. I think it's supposed to be like a pre-dinner snack, but you can have it instead of dinner if you like. I would. You know, it's just grazing away on cheeses, cured meats, pasta, little pizzas, bruschetta, and so on. This is what the Saukella family used to do down at Clowns on King Street, but of course they've been gone for about a year and a half now, so it's good that there is another option for aperitivo.
Right. Yeah, I used to know Raffaele. As my dad comes from a village next to him, they met very briefly, they had a coffee. This was in the old days when he was well, maybe 2004. Yeah, that was his happy days. And now people telling me, now, you know, there is nothing like Clown, but this place is kind of maybe just a continuation of something that he's always been here. But you just have to find it, you know? Carol and Richard been our neighbor forever. Carol, what would you say is the poem you wrote? Can you read the poem, Carol?
If you want a charming restaurant that serves up pure delight,
is the perfect wine to have with a wild boar.
If you want Italian splendor and romance to fill your night,
open a bottle of Brunello. Happy days.
Then look no further, friends, for now Maurizio is here.
What brought you to Cambridge?
Fish and chips.
And he and Sweet will serve you well. Fine wine, fine food, fine beer.
Oh yeah, you know, I'm going to have a feast now.
Maurizio, Maurizio, a man who's always on the go.
You know, food, wine, people.
He's enterprising, energetic, full of warmth and fun.
You marry, you know, Dran, you marry. Yeah?
And sweet, she is the very same. They both are winners in this game.
They eat and drink like if they are in Italy.
Let's toast their brand. Brand new venture, the success has just begun. Woo!
So good.
Thank you, Carlo.
You know, everything that we, you know, here for, yeah, to enjoy for.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. The sound of pop art. Thank you, guys.
Ah, you could soak up the atmosphere with a rustic Italian bread. That was Maurizio's on 44 Mill Road, and their Christmas menu is available to book now. £28 for three courses, and you have three options per course. All the music that you could hear, incidentally, was performed live by local band The Sound of Pop Art, as Maurizio mentioned at the end there. And that's taken from their new album, which you can find online at thesoundofpopart.bandcamp.com. And once again, many thanks, Maurizio and Sweet and your crew, for inviting us along. It's really nice to meet you guys.
So, a few weeks ago, you may remember, Sarah Lavelle of Quadrille Books came into the studio to talk about their new cookbooks. One of them, Black Sea by Caroline Eden, we held back because it's not published until November. Well, it's almost November now, so time to hear Sarah talk with Alan, who thinks it's a superb book.
I was thinking before, you know, there are the sort of, I suppose you could say, though it sounds insulting, it's not meant to, the conventional cookbooks where you've got typically, a recipe, a photograph, a recipe, a photograph, and there's more autobiographical ones. Mm. But this next one falls outside those categories. It's almost a historical book, and mm-hmm. It's The Black Sea by Caroline Eden. And I don't think I've ever seen... And it's a stunning, stunning book visually with an extraordinary cover. But I don't think I've ever seen a cookbook like this.
Well, I don't think there is really a cookbook like it. It's a book about food and travel. It's a piece of food writing. And the way that Caroline described it herself was a transporting and multi-sensory piece of travel writing, one that you can read, see and eat. And I think she's achieved that from the very first moment that I read her manuscript. I just thought this is absolutely incredible, the depth of research and knowledge in it, not just of food, but of the places that Caroline visits. She goes through the Slavic lands, Ukraine, Bulgaria, Romania, and she goes to Turkey. And we talked a lot from the beginning about how that... She goes through some areas that have had, gone through really appalling times, and how, in a way, it was a journey through darkness and light. And those themes are reflected in the recipes and the food, interestingly. By the time you get to sort of Mediterranean Turkey, the food's very, very different. And actually, I was quite surprised learning about the food in Bulgaria. It's much more sort of brighter and fresher and Mediterranean than I actually expected.
Yes, well, one of the Bulgarian recipes struck me. She says that Bulgaria has a love affair with roses, which I didn't know. So there's a recipe for poached apricots in rose water,
yes,
which does sound terribly nice.
Lovely, isn't it? Yeah. But all the ingredients that she used in the book are very... They're very basic in a way. They're very sort of humble. They do reflect the dishes that would be cooked there, but you don't need any sort of specialist ingredients. It's all very easy to get hold of. So yeah, I mean, I think that the food and the recipes are lovely, but the book is so much more. She just transports you with her writing to these places I haven't visited, I would love to visit. But we had a photographer, location photographer, Teo Kay, who did her whole journey and just went through photographing people and places, and he had unprecedented access to some places that I don't think have been photographed for, 20 years. So there is really unique material in the book.
Yes. Yes, well, I mean, there is a strong travel element in the book, but there is also a lot of history. So, for example, in Odessa, in Ukraine, there's references to the scene in Battleship Potemkin,
pram
going down the Odessa steps.
I love that.
Yeah. And actually, there aren't very many cookbooks that have an acknowledgement to Orhan Pamuk in either, so that's pretty good. But Yeah, there's a lot of history and also contemporary politics, yes. really, because she talks about going to Istanbul recently. Istanbul,
yes,
I think,
right.
is the most... Well, I don't think this is quite definitely the most interesting city I've ever been to. And she talks about going to the Grand Bazaar, and it's pretty well deserted because there's no tourists anymore. And that buzz that tourists bring is just not there. And, you know, it's sad. So, yeah, there's contemporary stuff as well as history.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's very erudite, but she makes it all so sort of accessible and immediate. And traditionally thinking of Istanbul as that bridge between the East and the West,
yes.
I guess, that it's so crucial to the story. Yeah, it is really sort of evocative and yes. Yeah,
so what's her history? What took her to travel to these parts and become so knowledgeable about them?
Caroline's a travel writer, and in fact she used to be a bookseller at Waterstones back in the day. And she travels all over the world, but I think she has a particular love for this area of the world. And we just talked a lot about how interest in food is heading towards that area. If you think of maybe when people were buying cookbooks in their droves sort of 25 years ago, the emphasis was on Italian, probably Italian, French. And then we've gone gradually sort of eastward, particularly in recent years. And I also think that interest will be heading kind of slightly northward as well. Scandinavia, of course, huge influence on the way people cook these days. So Black Sea was just, it's an attempt to explore a region that probably most people don't know anything about the food there. I mean, certainly I wasn't very knowledgeable about it before working on the book.
No, and what you said about the fact that there aren't any exotic ingredients, it's accessible to us all, is very true. And I now want to go to Romania. You know, she talks about going to Romania on the train, taking 2 days to get there, and how it's very cheap and all that sort of thing.
Yes.
But, the recipes, the raspberry buttermilk clafouti, for example, and the breakfast polenta, you know, it's obviously worth going to for
the
food,
absolutely.
As well.
Yes. Well, the photo shoot was great fun from that point of view. Yeah. Everything was absolutely delicious.
Right, but that's not out yet.
No, it's out in November.
A transporting and multi-sensory piece of travel writing. One you can read, see and eat. Now, what a description.
Yeah, and passing through all of those countries with your photographer, covering food, history, politics, what a job.
Black Sea by Caroline Eden will be published on the 1st of November in hardback. In fact, Heffers in Cambridge will be introducing it for a really good price. A special offer of £7.78 off, bringing the price down to £17.72. Sounds like a deal to me.
Yeah, great deal. Now, one of the good things about modern technology is the ease of getting the latest information straight to your inbox, your Twitter feed, whatever it may be. And the Calverley brothers, for instance, they make craft beers and ales in town, and we are signed up to their weekly mailing list. So, the other week, I was scanning what they've got on, and I thought perhaps it's worth just going to see them to go into detail about one drink, a dark beer for the winter, and seeing what makes it tick.
That was bubbles.
Well, here we are with Sam and Tom Calverley at Calverley's Brewery. First off, congratulations on your two babies.
Yeah, it's pretty wonderful.
We're going to talk about one drink today, one particular stout that you've been working on. Now, this is the Porter, 6.66%.
Yeah, so we didn't make any deals at the crossroads, but we're just saying, ended up at 6.66%.
What did the devil give you for your soul, Tommy?
Well, they taught me to play this here guitar real good.
Oh, son. For that, you traded your everlasting soul?
Well, I wouldn't use it.
Whenever anybody talks about stout, they tend to think of Guinness or Murphy's, but in actual fact, there are many different types of stout. What we're hoping to talk about today is the ingredients that go into it, how you've designed it, how it's developed over time.
Well, I can't take credit for the designing this beer. That's my brother.
Uh-huh.
But we basically, it's one of the beers that works very well with Cambridge water. It worked with the flavours that come through using the roasted malts. But Sam might like to say more.
Well, I looked at different beers from other breweries and went for quite a complex grain bill on it, which just makes kind of fuller flavours. You know, if you're using like just one or two dark malts, you can end up with it being a bit one-dimensional. I mean, one thing just amazes me how much people just keep coming back for the dark beers.
Mm.
When we first started trying to sell out into pubs, and a lot of places would say, oh, I can't sell a dark beer. You know, if we don't have our porter on or a dark beer, you get a lot of disappointed faces at the tap room.
Or flip it the other way. People come in when they know we've got it.
Yeah.
Because it's good. Well, my mum says anyway. Our mum says anyway.
You know, people are quite fanatical on dark beers.
With the porter here, I'd say it's also a celebration of the skill of the malting house, because what they've managed to achieve through barley is, you know, we use chocolate malt. It has the aromas of chocolate. And we also, you know, light crystal, giving a sweetness. Oats, which are also malted, giving a good body. All these combining to create something that people say is coffee or chocolate or like a cake, when actually it's all just from the humble barley and, you know, the skill of the malter.
Yeah. Is that the thing about creating a stout? Is it has similarities to making a bread? There's four key ingredients involved, but it's how those ingredients are roasted, dried, put together, blasted, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. So the four key ingredients, but combined, can create an infinite possibilities of flavour profiles.
Mm.
And what they have the pleasure of doing is tweaking and reconfiguring and seeing how these four key ingredients can make this infinite world of flavour, and this is one of them.
Visually, of course, it is as you would expect, but there is, as you say, a lot going into making it exactly that particular colour and giving it that particular head, because the barley and the chocolate malt, yeah, is going to vary in its intensity and its region to create the exact colour you've got here.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that's quite interesting, though, with the malt, is different malting companies have different ways that they actually produce malts.
Mm.
Say if you're looking at a recipe and it says, okay, you know, it needs strong white flour, there's certain base malts, like a pale malt, that might be interchangeable, but some of them are specific to particular suppliers. There's some that you can't really interchange.
Mm.
So the recipe, you know, has a direct link only with that malting company and their process, of which they've, you know, some of them have all numerous patented techniques and of temperatures that they hold it at and how they turn it at the same time or not and gradually heat it and all sorts of different techniques to kind of create their own malts, really.
A little bit like the Coca-Cola recipe, I suppose. They have their secrets. This is what makes our malt that particular malt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just quickly to distinguish for the listener. Now, you've got barley malt in here, and you've also got chocolate malt in here.
So they are all barley. The only ingredient going into the grain that's not barley is oats. And oats are very important for this beer because they create a mouthfeel, a certain thickness, so you get that lovely thick head on the beer.
Mm.
Anyone who's had porridge knows about how creamy an oat can be. So it's very important for this beer style, for our brewing of it.
This is the word that escaped me earlier, lovibond. Have I said that right? I read about this. It affects the range of colours in the roasted barley and therefore affects the output of the final malt.
Yeah. So one of our favourite malts that I've been waiting to get all year,
yeah,
the malting house hasn't been able to achieve it, the Carafa 3, which is a de-kerneled malt. So you get the darkness, but without the malt bite.
Mm.
And I use this in numerous beers, but we haven't been able to get hold of it because they haven't been able to achieve that. So it's all been coming out too light rather than the darkness that was wanted from the malt. So.
Is that a result of all of the crazy weather that's been happening around the world in the last year or so?
That's been something since we've opened up as a brewery. Mm. That's connected us to climate change, to do with the prices rising,
mm,
and realisation that harvests have gone down, but planting has gone up. Say more specifically with hops at the moment, but yeah, if anyone's read the newspapers this week, they would have seen about beer prices going up. Poland by 300%, but that's because they've got very cheap beer.
Mm.
I would say in the UK, we've got a strong tradition of growing malt in our country, and I believe that we've got some malting houses will keep it here, so I like to believe that beer is going to be here for the long time, because
yeah,
without beer we do not have civilization.
Well, lovely. That was a quick evaluation of the porter here down at Calverley's Brewery. Sam and Tom, thanks very much for being
always
on
a
flavor.
Pleasure, Matt. Always a pleasure.
Good to see you, Matt.
I might just do the audio of you drinking.
All right, yeah, I'll do.
Well,
Without beer, we do not have civilization.
Yeah, I think that was one of the first things Tom ever said to me 3 or 4 years ago. And that is a comment that you can probably find because we have years of flavor podcasts available on the Cambridge 105 Radio website. And that sits alongside archives of other great shows on the station, such as Bums on Seats and the Eclectic Light Show.
It was really interesting to hear how Cambridge Water working well with the flavours that come through the dark malts.
Mm.
You often hear about such comments with the hard London water being a good component for brewing their black beers. Now we have good hearty Cambridge black beers too.
We certainly do. And that music, as we all know, signals time for the latest food tweets from the city. Over to you, Carrie.
So, have you missed the afternoon teases, hashtag CheeseCon Thursday? If so, Jo Kraczynska is bringing back her cheese scones as part of a collaboration with the Enchanted Cinema. 3 days packed with classic Christmas films at the Guildhall with food by Jo. Tickets are on sale via the Cambridge Live website. Also in the city, Alex Rushmer and Lawrence Butler have announced a pop-up at Cambridge Distillery in Grantchester, serving a wintry take on their botanical menu from earlier in the year. Tickets are on sale now for the 27th of November to 8th of December event.
Nice. That's with Will Lowe, yes, of the Cambridge Gin Distillery?
Yes, it is.
Ah, good stuff.
The latest kitchen takeover at Thirsty on Mitcham's Corner is going to be from Mark Poynton, 17th to the 24th of November, serving up small plates in that informal setting that is Thirsty. To reserve your place, email Georgia at wearethirsty.co.uk.
Lovely.
Now, celeriac may be unlikely to win any of the most beautiful vegetable contests, but it's one of our panel of chefs incredibly enthusiastic about and have some really enticing ideas. Let's start with Samira Ether, the ex-head chef of Alimentum on Hills Road.
Celeriac's probably one of my favourite vegetables. We have it on the menu at the moment. Most favourite thing I like to do with it is to salt bake it. So it's really easy, you just make a salt dough, which is from flour and table salt. And you just wrap the whole celeriac as it is in the dough and cook it whole. It probably takes about an hour and a half. But you can put loads of different things into the salt dough. So some people put hay in there, you can put rosemary in there, different aromats will go in there, so like fennel, etc., etc. That is probably my favourite way.
And what sort of oven temperature would you use for that?
So quite high, so between 190 and 200 for about an hour. It takes quite a long time to cook because you're cooking it as a whole vegetable.
Right, so do you need to prepare the vegetable? Do you need to peel it or anything like that?
No. So we normally just take the bottom off. Just a little bit of the bottom off, because normally that's like covered in dirt. But no, you don't really need to do anything to it. It's after it comes out of the salt crust, that's when you'll peel it. And the salt basically just impermeates the vegetable and makes it really tasty. So we do that with the celeriac on the menu at the moment. But I like to use it in salads as well. I like to just salt it for maybe about 5 minutes, 5-10 minutes. Just so the water comes out of the vegetable, makes it quite limp. You can turn it into anything, so I like to use it for things like coleslaw, or you can use it for like celeriac remoulade, which is just with like bound with a little bit of mayonnaise. And I like to put some apple through it and some mustard, things like that. So yeah, there's loads of different things you can do with celeriac. I've used it for a risotto once, so instead of using rice, just dice the celeriac and cook the risotto exactly how you would cook a risotto, but with celeriac, cause it just tastes different, but it's nice. So yeah, I think that's it for celeriac. There's lots of things you can do with celeriac.
I'm a fan of mixing it with the apple and mustard, but now let's head over to the Cambridge Cookery and Bistro on Purbeck Road to get some comments from co-owner Tina Roche.
You know, again, I get very enthusiastic now. I can get carried away talking about celeriac. And we still have people asking us what it is when we use it in our cooking classes, so our 15-minute meals or autumn cooking. You know, fairly experienced cooks will still look at it and say, I'm not sure what this is. Is it a Swede? What is it? And it's so underrated, I think. It has the most wonderful nutty flavour. And it's brilliant to do half and half in a mash. So if you just want to mix it with using Mary's Piper or King Edward potatoes, so you have a really nice, lovely dry mash, mix it with celeriac, or just roast it on its own, is absolutely delicious as a side dish to homemade burgers, any kind of meats. It's absolutely lovely. But I think maybe my favourite is to use it into puree it into a soup. And then so you get a lovely creamy soup, and then topping it with crispy pancetta or a few slices of chestnut as well on top. Or even, dare I say it, and this can seem a bit odd, but if you have a few strips of smoked salmon, the heat of the soup will sort of semi-cook the salmon, so it does take on a different texture. But again, it's adding something salty with a little bit of a, not exactly a bite, but, you know, something to chew in this velvety soup is really good.
A lovely, creamy, velvety soup. Sounds excellent. Next up is Rosie Sykes with her ideas.
Yes, so celery, I would say, is one of my favourite winter vegetables. It's fantastic to make a mash with. I find that if you want to mash it and for it to be nice and solid without having to add potato or something, it's really great to bake. So I don't bother to peel it. I just wash it, cut it into quarters, wrap each quarter in foil and bake it like a potato until it's really, really soft. Make sure you put some salt and olive oil in. Then the skin, you can take off a nice thin layer of the skin and just put it in your food processor with some creme fraiche or some butter or olive oil, depending on what you like. And what I really like about celeriac mash is that it's got a lot of flavour, but it's super light, so it's not, doesn't feel heavy with a meal. It goes beautifully with game or pork or most meats, actually. And it's a lovely vegetarian option as well. You could sort of sprinkle it with some nuts and perhaps put an egg into it and bake it, and it's almost like a sort of unformed souffle, which would be a nice thing for a vegetarian. And the other thing I love doing with celeriac is making a gratin, which is very simple, really. It sounds a bit more scary than it is, but it's lovely with mushrooms. So maybe sauté off some mushrooms, peel a celeriac, slice it, toss it in some milk and cream with salt and some aromats, and layer up the celeriac and the sautéed mushrooms, pour over the cream, cover it and bake it in the oven, and you'll get a lovely result.
For about an hour?
Yeah, probably about an hour. Mm. Just until a knife goes in, about, you know, sort of mid-temperature, 180, something like that.
For mash, get celeriac. Could you imagine that advert? That's from years ago, going like that. Anyway, finally, Alex Rushmer, soon to be opening the Vandal Isle on Mill Road in January next year. Here he is.
Celeriac, my fondness for sort of gnarly, ugly root vegetables. I mean, it's not going to win any beauty contests, celeriac, but it has just the most incredible flavour. It's sort of slightly ethereally, almost aniseed-y, but very, very subtle. So good for people that don't like fennel. But it's fantastic. At the restaurant, actually, we used to roast it whole. We used to sort of cover it in some brown butter all over the top. So put it in a pan, add some brown butter to the pan, and spend about 15, 20 minutes just spooning the brown butter over the celeriac, and then cover it and put it in a low oven, 120, 130 degrees for probably about 3 or 4 hours. It takes a while to cook through. But what you end up with is this amazing nut brown, delicious, savoury exterior, and then the flesh inside almost steams. And if you want to finish it in a pan, again, with a little bit more butter, but as an accompaniment to game, it's fantastic, absolutely fantastic. It's a dish that I first had at the Hand and Flowers, actually, Tom Carriage's pub over in Marlow. I had a roast chicken that had been flavoured with hops and hay, and then this amazing celeriac about the size of a cricket ball, but perfectly, perfectly round, perfectly spherical, and as an accompaniment to the chicken, with the roasted chicken juices in there, and those lovely autumnal flavours of hops and hay and barley and malt, and it was just a fantastic combination. But again, very, very simple. But I think with ingredients like that, you don't need to do an awful lot to it. It's about celebrating almost the simplicity of the ingredient, which is what I try and achieve through my cooking.
So there we go, a whistle-stop tour of four of our local chefs' ideas for cooking with celeriac, and maybe some inspiring ideas to try too.
Yeah. Now, let's move on to our next feature. And, you know, I'd imagine that most of our listeners may remember the Backstreet Bistro. I went there a few times. I enjoyed their Christmas dinners. I liked the atmosphere. And in my mind, they haven't really been gone that long. but they are indeed gone. And in their place now is the Petersfield Pub. And Carrie, this was your assignment for Flavours episode today, possibly chosen because you're a fan of their Bloody Marys.
I certainly am, yes. So last Sunday, I went down to the Petersfield and had a chat with their manageress to discuss their style, what they've got coming up, and those little moments that unexpectedly welcome changes to their menu, such as this one.
Someone was telling me a story about one of your hamburgers. Is there a story there that I haven't
heard
of? Yes,
there is a story there. So you might have noticed that we have a burger on our menu called the Henry. That's a nod to one of the local residents. It was my mistake, to be honest, is where I'll start this story. This boy, he's about 8, he's called Henry. And he ordered a burger with me, and I rung through a kid's burger, assuming that that's what he wanted. So I brought the burger to the table, and he burst into tears and said that he was a grown-up, not a boy, and I was absolutely mortified. So I took it back up to the kitchen. I said to the boys, I said, can you make this into a proper big boy burger, because I've offended this little kid and I can't believe it, I'm absolutely devastated. So they said, leave it with us, we'll make it into a proper burger. And they piled on a couple of extra patties, they put chorizo, they put pulled pork, they put pretty much every meat they could find in the kitchen and every type of cheese, and they made this stack burger that was insane, and he ate the whole thing. So I said, right, well, I have to put it on the menu. So we did.
Do many people order it?
It's a really popular dish. When it was National Burger Day, we did the Henrietta, which was, you know, a nod to that and Henry's older sister. And that was a 3-stacked patty. And if you ate it all, you got it for free. And that was also amazing.
Oh, brilliant. That's wonderful.
The Petersfield is a relatively new pub to Cambridge. It's just off Mill Road at number 2 Sturton Street. And this is Jess Simmons. She's the manager.
I think it's about a year and a half. We reopened in February after the refurbishment of last year.
And this used to be the Back Street Bistro, is that right?
It did, yes. It was very big boots to fill. And then we took it over because they retired and have tried to keep up to their standards, really. We kept the ceiling from the Back Street Bistro just because they'd worked really hard on drinking all those bottles of wine and we couldn't really throw them away. But we also were not trying to replace them. We just wanted to be kind of the next generation taking over this beautiful building. The main challenges when we opened really related to some of the residents who were a bit reluctant to have a big corporate company come in compared to a couple who were running the Backstreet Bistro before. However, I think as they got to know Ben and I as a couple, we're almost a traditional landlord and landlady, and there's Bruno the dog as well. They all came round pretty much, and they were the only real challenges that we faced, really. So the local community are a massive part of what we do here. Yeah, our favourite local is a guy called Dave. He's absolutely brilliant.
Comes in every...
Yeah, he's here now. Comes in every day. I think we're almost last on his stop, depending on what mood he's in. If he's in, wants an extra beer, he might pop up to the Swan late at night. But yeah, it's great. We try to do a lot of events. And then any events or supper clubs and things like that that we do, everybody who lives close to the pub gets a discounted rate off that as well.
What goes on during the course of a week here?
We do a wine and cheese night on a Monday, which is really good. We do half-price bottles of wine and massive cheese sharing boards with baked camembert and things like that. And by the end of the weekend, it's organised chaos, but it's very busy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we arrived here about an hour ago. It's 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and it's absolutely packed to the rafters with people having Sunday lunch.
Any pub that I go to, I kind of judge them on their Sunday roast and the atmosphere on a Sunday. So we made sure that we had amazing Bloody Marys, we have roasts that go all the way through the day, and then we top it all off with a pub quiz at the end of the day, and it's paid off. I mean, a year and a half down the line, we're fully booked most Sundays.
I have to vouch for your Bloody Marys, not to be biased in any ways whatsoever. 18 months ago when I first tried one, they're still the best in the city.
Yeah.
But don't tell Ben that.
No, so Ben's gone to open the old ticket office and he's trying to perfect his new Bloody Mary recipe to rival ours, but we'll see how he goes with that.
Talking about the streets of Mill Road, there's a lot of different pubs and breweries, all sorts of things. You've got Cowfleys just around the corner. How do you differentiate yourself from everything that's going on?
We're in a really lucky position that in this area there's loads of pubs, breweries, restaurants and things like that. And when we first opened, the whole idea was never to compete with anybody, it's to offer something different. We frequent all of the pubs around here and they're all famous for their own little reason. We take great pride in our food and I think it's some of the best in the area. Ben and I moved from London to open the Petersfield. We'd worked in London for about 4 years, running pubs separately. Ben was mainly the general manager and I was kind of assistant manager. We both wanted to get out of London. There comes a time where if you're not, it's not in your heart to be there anymore. It can be really stressful. You don't see your friends and it was really intense. So we were looking at places just an hour and a half from London maximum. Found Cambridge. I'd never been before. Ben came for an interview with City Pub Group. And then we moved. Lived above the Mill on Mill Pond for a couple of weeks, and that was amazing. Our first introduction to Cambridge being Mill Pond was, we were like, this is like being on holiday all the time. We have got a jam-packed autumn and Christmas coming up, kicking off with our murder mystery party for Halloween.
So, oh, tell me more.
Train-themed. It's set in the Austrian mountains in 1933. It's about 7 o'clock it'll start. It includes a three-course candlelit dinner, and one of the girls will be fully dressed up, fancy dress, coaching you all the way through the murder mystery so you can try and figure out who done it.
A moustache is required.
Once you buy a ticket, you'll be sent a secret thing about which character you are, and it'll have the suggestions for what fancy dress you should wear. So then we've got bonfire night, which will be really good. We'll probably light the fire for the first time. Have mulled wine, and our cheese fondue, which is really popular, will be coming back. After that, it's kind of Christmas celebrations kick off. We've got our dining room at the back, which is perfect for groups of up to about 24 people. Three-course menus that you can choose from, or we can do canapés. And then we're busy all the way through until New Year's Eve. So we do an eight-course tasting menu on New Year's Eve, starting at 9 o'clock. And as soon as you buy a ticket, you get all the information about the menu and all of those things. Most of our keg beer, we choose really kind of interesting, crafty ales. We don't really want to compete with people like Calverley's. They're our neighbours. I'd love people to go there, enjoy their beers, and then come here for something a little bit different. So we have a locals card. It's called Petersfield Perks Card. You just have to bring proof of address. The limit is half a kilometre. You then exchange your phone number and details for a little fob that sits on your key. It entitles people to 20% off food Monday to Friday, plus discounted rates to things that we're doing, like our murder mystery party or our New Year's Eve tasting menu. You get a discounted price for that. It's really good. It's a really good way of kind of engaging with the local community.
So Jess Simmons, manageress at 2 Sturton Street, just on the corner as you come down Kingston Street. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carrie.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio. And that was the Petersfield. They slot in really well to the local area amongst all the other nearby pubs like the Kingston, the Blue, the Alex and the Geldart. Even Dave approves. And Dave knows when a pub is good in Cambridge.
He does.
You can find the full Petersfield menu and their events online at thepetersfield.co.uk.
And of course, that music is all about the free food that is now available in Cambridge, which you can find on the Olio app. Well, Olio, as we have found, is quite quiet at the weekends, but it does buzz during the weekdays. So do give this a try. Olio, for anyone who doesn't know, is a free app. It's for your phone or your tablet. And once you install it, you set your location and it tells you where all the free food is available near you. So just to whet your appetite, here are some examples of nice things that have recently gone. Now, Zarina on Coleridge Road had stacks of sandwiches, baguettes and pots from Pret a Manger available for pickup. Zarina is one of the Olio champions. That means they pick up this food from the donator and then they act as a one-stop for others to collect from. Makes things nice and easy. Also, Erica, she had two organic sunflower sprout pots to give away, whilst Nikki had a big bag of croissants and pastries available. So you can see there is plenty of opportunity for interesting foods for free for you on the Olio app. And they do even, they do non-related food items as well for free. Makes it a little bit like Freecycle, I suppose.
Flavour reporter Dr. Sue Bailey has been out and about again. Here she is visiting the recent addition to Mill Road, Onnie's Wine Bar, which also specialises in Egyptian cuisine. Sue started off with asking Onnie about her two favourite dishes.
I have two examples. The first one, which I really like to talk about, is the pork and the sweet potatoes mash. The pork, of course, for me is new. I never had it before I came to England. I was so interested in that meat because it's delicious. It's like a blank compass. You can deliver it the way you like. I decided on the type of spices to go with the pork. And I thought sweet potatoes is really nice and I like it personally. So I decided on that dish. When I was a child, my grandmom always used to bake sweet potatoes and to serve it with dokka. Dokka means blend of nuts and spices. So she used to bake it. When we come back from school, we find it hot and nice and spread over it the dokka. Just so delicious. You know, the sweet and the nuts and the spice and the salt is just... So that used to be for us before the meal.
Do you put dokka with your dish?
I love dokka and I always have it in my house.
Perfect. That sounds really, really lovely.
I definitely add dokka to lots of food. I use it here as well, you know, especially with salads and vegetables. Because, you know, vegetable needs really lots of flavouring. So dokka is the good one to do. And then with the sweet potatoes and pork, I added labneh. Labneh is very, very traditional Egyptian salad based on yogurt, cucumber and mint.
I will come back and ask a little bit more about the food in a minute. Mm. But David, tell me a little bit more about the wine side of the wine bar, please.
Right, well, my profession is as a chartered accountant and tax consultant, so it is a slightly different sort of profession to deal with wine. I lived in Germany in 1975 and 77. While I lived in Germany, I was introduced to a winery in Weinsberg, near to Stuttgart. When Honey and I decided to set up this wine bar, the first thing we did was drive to this winery and come back with 120 bottles, which we now have available. Spätburgunder, which is the German for Pinot Noir, and a very German grape called Trollinger, as well as Riesling that I think everybody will recognise as very much a German product. And of course, there's a lot of fun in actually collecting the wine as well as buying it. In addition to that trip, we've been to Spain and brought back to Galan from a very small winery near to Granada. The older wines that we have, and it's interesting that traditional French wine, Bordeaux, goes very well with Oni's food. Those we actually bought at auction. I like to have a good range of wines between £6 and £10 a glass. Mm. Very much an eclectic selection, what I think will go with honest food.
Mm. So, the whole idea of wine and food matching and trying to balance out spicy with the wine.
Exactly.
Is a lovely combination of challenges in that sense. How much do you talk about the balance between what's a good wine and what's the dish that will complement it and vice versa?
Yeah. First of all, we talk about the flavour of the wine, how it's fruity, how it's earthy, spicy, and then I balance that with the food I'm going to do. So the wine will not overpower the food. The balance will be in a harmony.
Sounds perfect. And you have sort of almost like tasting plates, small plates, isn't it?
Yes.
So delicate, well-balanced dishes.
Exactly. Mm. This menu is like my children. I actually can't tell you which one I like more.
Fair enough.
I'm really very happy with my creation between the English and the Egyptian because of the pork and the lamb. So the mint sauce come with the lamb. The mint sauce is lovely, but I didn't want to put it on my meat so to overpower it so much. So I put the mint in the mashed potatoes. So mashed potatoes has a mint, and then the lamb comes as a meat with the flavour I put it in the lamb.
So and the lamb is marinated, isn't
it? Yes,
yes. From the day before.
Yeah, it's sweet spices and fresh orange, you know, so...
That sounds lovely.
Yeah, indeed. So, and the balance between vegetarian, vegan, pescatarian as well, so... So, for example, this is really kind of my favorite dish, the stuffed pepper. It has four different fresh herbs, which really, really gives that aroma and flavor. And this is totally 100% vegan.
And the herbs are grown in our garden. And
exactly.
Even better. Yes. That sounds
perfect. We're currently advertising for somebody to come and work an allotment to grow food that we then bring here and Oni cooks.
Excellent idea.
And you know what? I'll tell you something is probably kind of impossible. When I went to Egypt, everywhere I go, I get seeds. Because I know I'm not allowed to get the plant, but I get the seeds. There is an Egyptian traditional dish, molokeya, which is leaves like spinach. I'm actually growing that. So things like that. But this, definitely I decided, you know, I mean, a year ago, I got the allotment to grow all the vegetables I'm actually using in my kitchen.
And there's a couple of dishes here where shamsi sun bread. Tell me a bit more about that.
That is Upper Egypt tradition bread. My parents came from Upper Egypt. So every time they come to Cairo to visit us, they always bring with them the shamsi bread. It's a very round dish and it's so incredibly delicious. I created my own shamsi bread, which really matches the flavor.
And you haven't been open for very long, 2.5 months.
That's
right.
Yes, the first night we were open to the public was the 28th of July.
Why Mill Road?
I've been in Cambridge since 1979. It's changed colossally in that time. It now very much is the road you go to, particularly if you want different ethnic styles of cooking. Mm. And we think that we fit in with that community very well.
I think so.
You enjoy your cooking, don't you?
Very much so, absolutely. I gather you're not open lunchtime, but you are open evenings from...
Tuesday to Saturday. We open at 5:30 through to 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. And you've a website, onnies.co.uk.
That's right.
And Facebook, Onnies Wine Bar. And Instagram, O-N-Y-S, Onnies Wine Bar. All the best.
Thank
and
you very
coming
much.
Up for Christmas, yeah. Having a fantastic time.
Yeah, thank,
thank
you.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Onnie and David. Onnie's Wine Bar is located at 111 Mill Road, right next to the bridge.
And Green Onion signals the start of our new section. We begin with jobs.
Petersfield are looking for a sous chef. Interested parties can drop in a CV at the pub or on 2 Sturton Street or send an email to info@thepetersfield.co.uk.
King's College are looking for a part-time food and beverage assistant to cover evenings and weekends, front of house, bar service, hall banquets, etc. The pay is £7.63 per hour. Applications can be made through Gumtree for that one, which you can find it in their hospitality and catering jobs section.
How about becoming a mystery diner in restaurants and bars in the city? A company called Research Tribe are offering interested applicants up to £50 per visit for feedback you provide. If that sounds good to you, you can apply online at researchtribe.com.
Now, the station tavern is looking for a chef de partie or an excellent commis chef. It's £9 per hour, 28 days holiday per year with development programme and chef academy. You'll also be entitled to a 20% discount on all services at the pub, so if you fancy some of that, drop in your interest at the Station Tavern, which is right next to the Cambridge Central train station. And if you do, don't forget to mention that you heard about this and other jobs through Flavour on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Also, the Station Tavern is looking for a sous chef. All the same benefits and opportunities apply, only this time the pay is £10 to £11 per hour. Again, just pop into the Station Tavern.
And in city news, we are sad to see the closure of Alimentum on Hills Road. At one time, one of Cambridge's Michelin-starred restaurants, and Samira Effer, who you heard in our celeriac feature, was head chef there. On a positive note, Samira announced on Thursday that she has accepted a head chef position at the Box Tree in West Yorkshire. Our loss is their gain. We wish her well. And of course, many thanks for all the time she's been on Flavour, as well as the rest of the Alimentum team.
Maurizio's on Mill Road, again who you heard earlier in the show, have just announced a food and wine evening titled An Evening with...
Baboglio de Gaioncelli.
Their wine producer, with a host of stories from the region along with free sparkling wines paired with their food. Tickets for this event are £30 each. It takes place on Thursday the 8th of November and you can pop into Maurizio's to book or email info@mauriziodining.com.
Thirsty on 46 Chesterton Road are offering to shatter your preconceptions of the oft-maligned Retsina, that Greek wine that earned quite a reputation back in the 70s and 80s. In fact, a post on a wine message board last month opened with, "Has anyone drunk any recently? I see the Wine Society has a Retsina, but the kind I'm thinking of needs raw onions and cigarettes for an accompaniment." Well, that was decades ago, and things change. As Sam Owens, owner of Thirsty, is happy to claim now. In fact, he'll stake his name on it. The biodynamic amphora-made Retsina that he's got available is part of their Thirsty Wine 2.0 event. That is, 20 new wines on their shelves for you to try out today from 3 till 8pm. And you can book your ticket via the Eventbrite website, £13.52 each, and you'll also get 10% off anything you order or buy there today.
And finally, wine writer extraordinaire Oz Clark will be appearing at the Cambridge Literary Fest, and he'll be bringing some wines with him for you to try as he waxes grape-like about his latest book, Red and White. Tickets are £14 or £10 for a concession. This event is taking place on Sunday the 25th of November from 4 to 5pm at the Babbage Lecture Theatre, which is just round the back of the Grand Arcade. You can book online at cambridgeliteraryfestival.com. Also, did you know that before he was a wine writer, Oz Clark was an actor with the Royal Shakespeare Company and also starred in Evita? The things you learn, eh?
The things you learn indeed. And sadly, our time is just about up, but we will be back. Flavour broadcasts on alternative Saturdays at 1pm with a repeat on the Sunday at 2, and then podcast for perpetuity and afterwards the following week.
We're off air and busy getting the latest news stories and comments from around the city to fuel our next episode. You can help us too in our endeavours, or just say hello by emailing us at flavour@cambridge105.co.uk or contacting us on Twitter at flavour105.
Coming up next on Cambridge 105 Radio this afternoon
is Jazz Today with Pete Butchers. Polish Waves is at 5 p.m, followed by From the Terraces, bringing you the latest football results from Cambridge United, Cambridge City and Histon Town, presented by Tim Armitage and the team. The Big Band Show is at 7 o'clock with John Hammond, and at 8 it's Let the Good Times Roll with Jackie Bond. Rebel Arts Radio serves up its left of centre music, politics, art and discussion, and that's brought to you by Pete Monaghan, Mark Evans and Johnny Cabbage. Stagger is at 10, rap, electronica and experimental music with Tom Taylor, David Cunnington and Ian Shaw. Finally, we end the evening with Bookmark, Lee Chambers' literary review show featuring a host of Cambridge-based writers.
And that's all from us. We will be back on the 10th of November. So until then,
keep dancing.
Oh, wrong show.